Out on alto with Milko Lefiev piano, Bob Magnuson bass and Carl Burnett drums in 1981. And now, here on BBC Radio 3, it's time for Julian Joseph and Jazz Lineup.
Hello. The sound of guitar virtuoso Martin Taylor, my very special guest on today's show. I'll be getting up close and personal with him, hearing about his early influences, inspirations, and his approach to making music. He's also brought along his guitar, and I'll be joining him on the piano, and I'm really looking forward to that. Also on the programme, highlights of Norwegian saxophone star Jan Garbarek and his group in concert recorded at the London Jazz Festival, featuring Indian percussion master Trilok Gurtu. Here's a taste. Jan Garbarek group featuring Trilok Gurtu, and more from that performance later. Well, one of the great collaborations that helped bolster the reputation of jazz created in Europe was Jan Garbarek with the quartet of American pianist Keith Jarrett. And Jarrett releases a collection of solo piano concerts recorded in Italy in October 1996. Here he is playing a honky-tonk blues as an encore in Genova. Thank you. The Honky Tonk of Keith Jarrett, and encore in Genova from his latest release on ECM called A Multitude of Angels. So, to the first piece in our concert set from Jarrett's old bandmate, Jan Gabarek. While Gabarek has one of the most distinctive saxophone sounds in jazz, influenced by the folk tradition of his native Norway, he exudes a soulful melodicism and haunting mysticism. From his own recordings and those with Jarrett's quartet in the 1970s, he's continued to be an innovative force. Indeed, his musical explorations and collaborations with the avant-garde, folk, Indian, jazz, and classical musicians have helped define the identity of one of the world's most important artists and record labels, ECM. Our concert set features him in his long-standing quartet with Yuri Daniel on bass, Rainer Brunninghaus on keys, and the Indian classical virtuoso percussionist Trilok Gurtu. Described by composer George Russell as the most original voice in European jazz since Django Reinhardt, this was Gabarek's first UK concert with his own band since 2012, following on from his performances with the Hilliard Ensemble back in 2014. The concert was broadcast live for the digital pop-up station BBC Music Jazz. I was at the helm for that broadcast as the Jan Gabarek group featuring Trilok Gurtu started their concert at the Royal Festival Hall in the South Bank Centre with Molda Canticle. Thank you. the episodic and evocative folk-infused composition Molde Canticle excerpts from the Yangabarik group featuring Trilok Gurtu on percussion, and more from that performance later on the show. And also coming up soon, I'll be getting up close and personal with guitarist Martin Taylor. This is Jazz Lineup, and you're listening to the very best of jazz with me, Julian Joseph, right here on BBC Radio 3. A large percentage of today's jazz musicians all graduate from various conservatoires, which serve as a meeting point for up-and-coming talent as well as a place of learning. A current crop of recent graduates surround vibraphonist Ralph Wild with his band Mosaic that includes drummer Scott Chapman, Cecilia Bignall on cello, and Misha Mulov-Abado on bass. This is Reprise. Music of vibraphonist Ralph Wild and his band Mosaic, and that was Reprise from the album Subterranea, out on Edition Records. Now for my very special guest, Martin Taylor, an extraordinary artist who early on in his career walked in the shoes of guitar hero Django Reinhardt, having played with legendary violinist Stefan Grappelli. Over the four decades of performing and recording, Taylor has enriched and contributed profoundly to solo guitar playing in jazz, and has the admiration of guitarists inside and outside of jazz. But before I get up close and personal with him, here he is duetting on Ain't Misbehavin' with UK Reeds man Alan Barnes on clarinet. Thank you. The sound of guitarist Martin Taylor from his duet album with sax man Alan Barnes, and that was Fats Waller's Ain't Misbehavin'. Martin Taylor is a British jazz icon who has the respect of the international jazz community for his ability to step into any situation and shine. He has stepped into the shoes of his hero Django Reinhardt and played in the Hot Club of France on the invitation of Stefan Grappelli. And ever since, he has played the guitar on the most high level and devised a very personal solo guitar approach referred to as the Fingerstyle Guitar School. I'm very, very pleased to welcome very special guest Martin Taylor, who is the subject of our regular feature, Up Close and Personal. And he's also brought along his guitar. What is it that's so magical about the guitar for you?
I think for me, I became fascinated quite early on about the guitar being a complete instrument. You've got everything there somewhere under your fingertips, just a matter of finding them.
Yes.
Just finding it. And so I think that was it. Rather than playing a single note instrument, I started playing the guitar around about 1960. I didn't take it up as a, you know, because it was fashionable. Of course, it was becoming very fashionable at that time. But it's because my dad took up the guitar first. And my dad was a jazz musician, double bass player. And I just really fell in love with it straight away. And I didn't have any great plan along the way, particularly. I think as a small child, it was a way that I got to kind of understand and interpret life, really.
Mm.
It was something that I did understand. So I would go to school, and I don't know whether I was a little bit slow or what, but I'd go to school, and very often they were talking about things I didn't know what they were going on about. But yeah. Music, I understood that. Mm. My dad put a Fats Waller record on, or Django Reinhardt, or Bix Beiderbecke. I understood what they were doing.
Right.
It's never been a hobby for me. Playing music has always been more than that. It's a way that I really got to connect with this world I found myself in. It's just part of who I am.
Right.
Yeah.
Your father was a jazz musician, so starting very young, you would definitely follow what your dad does, and it would be fascinating. Was there a time where you thought, I'm not really feeling jazz so much, and coming up in a time where you're surrounded by pop and rock music, were you not tempted to veer in those other directions?
I was fascinated by improvisation and harmony.
Mm.
And that was something I didn't get in other kinds of music that my friends were playing.
Mm.
And I found it quite easy to play some of that music, and we would get together and jam, but it didn't really have any great interest for me. I remember listening to Django Reinhardt play. My dad was playing this. I was really fascinated by that. Mm. It was as if his music was talking to me. And because it was such a melodic form of improvisation, and I can remember my dad saying, oh, he's improvising here after the melody. Mm. And I said, well, what's that? And my dad, who wasn't a schooled musician either, he said, well, when it goes a second time round, they have the same chord sequence, but he just makes up his own melody on it. So I understood that.
Right.
So I wasn't taught in a very complicated way.
Yeah.
He just taught me that, just make up another melody that fits with that. I got that immediately. That's actually how I teach all my students.
Right.
That melodic approach. And hearing Django, if you hear that one track in particular that really got me was I'll See You in My Dreams, where Django just played this masterpiece of an improvised solo. It's just the most poetic thing ever heard.
Thank you. Django Reinhardt and the Quintet of the Hot Club of France, and I'll See You in My Dreams from the album Paper Moon. What are the hallmarks of Django's playing? How did you find the Django in you?
I think of playing music as storytelling.
Right.
Basically, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard in his playing, and I heard it in Louis Armstrong, mm-hmm. I heard it in Charlie Parker. Mm-hmm. They were telling me a story.
Right.
That's how I always approached it. So those early days of listening to my dad's records, which was, you know, some of the earlier jazz, was just had such a profound effect on me that even though I didn't want to become a stylist and play, you know, a style from the past, I wanted to bring things to the present. You know, I think the way I play is contemporary, but it has all those elements of those things that came before.
It certainly does. I mean, that's one of the things that's fascinated me about your playing, is that you have a contemporary sound, you have contemporary vocabulary, but when you're playing in the style or in the spirit of the earlier music, it sounds like the earlier music with the spirit of now.
When I formed my group Spirit of Django, which Stefan Grappelli named, actually, because he heard the track and he said, oh, you really captured the spirit of Django there. Mm. So that's how that came about back in the 80s. When I was playing that music, I didn't want it to be just trying to copy what happened before.
Right.
But just to continue with that. So after a while, by the time we made the last couple of records, I was writing a lot of the music for it. Even the very first one, I wrote some of the tunes on that. I was giving it a contemporary twist, really. I just play... And I play what I think is appropriate most of the time.
Yeah.
So when I was playing in Bill Wyman's band, the Rhythm Kings, because he wanted me in the band for some of the more jazzy things that he was playing with Georgie Fame and Gary Brooker. And I just played things that I thought would fit. I didn't try to play like anyone else.
Right.
But making a worthy contribution to what's going on, not play something that is just completely... from another realm of music, but playing something that really fit. This is a big lesson that I got from working with Stefan Grappelli, because I remember when I first played with him, although he used to feature me quite heavily, it was always, okay, you get one chorus here, you get one chorus on this tune, you just take the bridge on this one, you can do anything you want on the introduction of this. So it was very short sections that I improvised on, and at first... You know, coming from a jazz improvisation background, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I could just stretch out for some more choruses?
Yeah.
But then I realized the lesson there was, if you just have four bars to improvise something on, you've got to make it really meaningful. You can't throw everything in. You can't throw in the kitchen sink. Oh, you can't play everything you ever know. I took my inspiration really from listening to piano players and how they did things with the left hand and the right hand, which is... very difficult on the guitar at first, but you find out that you actually, the way it works is you have to leave things out. So I then started to learn about the effectiveness of not playing certain things and using different voicings that make it sound a lot bigger than it really is.
Well, we'll investigate that further, but you're going to play us a piece first.
Yeah.
Something from the standard songbook.
Why don't I play something inspired by Bill Evans?
Absolutely.
Someday My Prince Will Come.
Over to you, Martin. Thank you. Beautiful. Thank you, Martin. Martin Taylor playing Someday My Prince Will Come, performing for us here on Jazz Lineup at Maida Vale Studios in London. And what a pleasure it is to hear you, to be sitting by you.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here again. No, it's funny because I used to come to this studio a lot in the 70s and 80s to radio broadcasts.
Yeah.
BBC Jazz Club used to be in this very studio we're in here. I've got a real kind of nostalgic feeling as soon as I walked in into the place. It's good to be here.
The way that you use the whole guitar, this is something that was influenced by piano players. You were talking about that. And then you were saying that you have to leave a lot out. What do you mean?
Well, when I was playing things there, I mean, I'm suggesting a lot of the time that this is going on. I can kind of set that feel up. Then after a while, I can just ease on that. The way you would do on the piano with your left hand.
Yeah.
So... So it's that feeling of a jazz waltz going on, but I'm actually playing in the spaces. And
all right, beautiful. Martin, we just heard you playing Someday My Prince Will Come. We heard you talking about the inspiration of the piano to the way you've devised your own personal guitar style that has mesmerized many guitarists, but many musicians across the world. What other influences have affected your development of your guitar style?
At first, becoming fascinated by the piano and the complete way that a piano player can just sit down. I used to work with piano players, and somebody would come up and say a tune.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can see you do it, and they'll just say a tune, and you'll just sit down and you'll play it.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of guitar players I met would have to work everything out.
Right.
That they didn't have this this method, which is kind of method that I've kind of come up with and that I teach now. Is how you can actually just take a melody and chords and just I can just instantly pretty much turn it into a solo piece. I realized there was a lot of difficulty with that, and one of the first things that I discovered was that I couldn't play the guitar well enough to get across some of my ideas. So I had to up my game a little bit with guitar playing, which took a while to do.
How did you specifically approach that, though?
I just immersed myself in it in great detail. And a lot of the practicing I did and still do is all in my mind, in my head.
Right.
I don't actually do that with the guitar. So I thought, if I sit down with the guitar and try and play it, the guitar will tell me, no, you can't do this.
Right.
So I purposely played it in my mind, heard it, visualized it. And then once I had it all worked out in my mind, I'd played it 1,000 times in my head. I could pick up the guitar and then play it. But I remember going to see Andre Segovia play when I was quite young and thinking, well, just going out on stage with a guitar and playing like that.
Classical guitar maestro.
Yeah, so absolutely fantastic. And, I put some thoughts in my mind, maybe I should play classical guitar. And then I thought, no, well, I can't read music and I'd have to do all that. And it seems like a lot of work and you've got to play things in a certain way. There's no improvisation involved. Then I heard, I'd already listened a lot to Chet Atkins, who I then actually started to work with many years later. And I heard Merle Travis, who were these finger-picking guitar players from the States, from Kentucky and Tennessee. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, it is actually physically possible to play that on the guitar. But if I could have that technical ability, but with the jazz knowledge that I have... then you know I can really come up with something, and I think that's the if I have one thing that is unique to me from other guitar players that I know. I work a lot with guitar players. I love collaborating with guitar players. Some of the acoustic fingerstyle guitar players that I work with are just they're wonderful. They come up with some amazing things, but they don't have a background in jazz.
Right,
and then sometimes I work with jazz guitar players who have all that knowledge and that vocabulary, but then they're not able because they haven't really got into that other side of playing the guitar. I've kind of covered two things, really. You know, I've become a fingerstyle guitar player, like a classical player, but I brought that jazz knowledge into that. There's a style of guitar playing, solo style, called chord melody.
Right.
And where you just take the chords, put the melody on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really do that, because I kind of do it the other way around. I start with the melody, yeah, and I see what I can fit in underneath. And it's a lot. The amount of guitar players I've said to them, try that. And they said, wow, I never thought of that before.
Right. Well, I know somebody who's very important to you musically is the composer Ennio Morricone.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about his music.
I always loved listening to classical music. As a little kid, I used to listen to the radio, probably things recorded in this very studio,
and trying
to work out what all the instruments were.
Right.
You know, I was fascinated by the sounds. You know, how do you make that? You know, when you had two flutes and an oboe playing something, it created one amazing sound.
Mm.
And from the harmonic side, I heard, you know, orchestrators like Nelson Riddle and Billy May, just these wonderful string arrangements. So when I played a ballad,
yeah,
I started to think of it in that kind of way.
Sure.
So I just loved orchestral music. Mm. And when my older son, James, his wife, got married in Italy, they played Ennio Morricone piece.
Mm.
And just lovely. Then a few years later, my younger son died. And I can remember, you know, going through a very, very difficult time for 4 years because of the circumstances of everything. I was very traumatized by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day just hearing this piece of music again. Mm-hmm. And kind of everything was okay again, kind of.
Well, let's listen to Ennio Morricone and Once Upon a Time in America. The evocative sound of Ennio Morricone and Once Upon a Time in America, a very poignant piece of music for you, Martin. Well, this is a very poignant time, or very celebratory time, because you're celebrating your 60th birthday.
Yes. There was a time when I wasn't sure I'd make it.
So what is your daily practice routine like now?
I've never been really big on practicing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, most of my practicing, I kind of imagine it and visualize it. and I just imagine playing things. But and I've been playing the guitar since I was so young, about 4 years old, 3 or 4 years old, that it's a part of me.
Right.
I know a lot of players that don't start playing the guitar till they're in their teens or even 20s, and have this feeling that they have, if they don't play for a day or a few days, they get rusty. But touch wood, I've never had that problem, so I can go quite a long time without ever actually picking up the guitar, and I just carry on from where I left off. And you know, I don't say that in any kind of smug way. I'm just sometimes I can't believe it. I feel quite guilty, I think. But I'm always working on things in my mind.
Right.
Work it all out, visualize it, hear it, imagine how I would play it, and then pick the guitar up.
Well, I'm sitting here right by a piano, so I'm going to ask you, what do you imagine that we should play?
I think we should play Stella by Starlight.
Let's do that.
It's always a good one.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Julian.
And it's such a treat to have you here, such a treat to hear you play. And thank you for letting us get up close and personal.
Thank you indeed.
Up Close and Personal with guitarist Martin Taylor. And what a pleasure to have him in the studio. And that was he and I saying farewell with our version of Victor Young's Stella by Starlight. You're listening to Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, bringing you the best of jazz from the UK and beyond here on BBC Radio 3. Well, back to the Yangabarik group at the London Jazz Festival. The Royal Festival Hall was packed with many fans having made the pilgrimage to see the saxophone legend with Yuri Daniel on bass, Reina Brunninghaus on keyboards and the effervescent Trelock Gerttu on percussion. Here's the Yangabarik group as they continue with Medieval. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Yangabarik group recorded as part of the London Jazz Festival, captivating a capacity crowd at the Royal Festival Hall at the South Bank Centre, finishing up their set with Stevie Winwood's Had to Cry Today. On next week's jazz lineup, another chance to hear my encounter with superstar jazz composer, producer and arranger Quincy Jones when I caught up with him at the Montreux Jazz Festival. There's lots more jazz right here on BBC Radio 3 with Jazz Now on Monday night at 11. This week, they feature some of their jazz highlights from 2016, including a performance by saxophonist Julian Arguiles with the Frankfurt Radio Big Band, recorded at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. To end, a new and exciting recording from Austrian guitarist Wolfgang Muschspiel. He's been recording for ECM for the last couple of years, and his latest project features a stellar lineup with pianist Brad Meldow, bassist Larry Grenadier, and Brian Blade on drums, and for good measure, the young trumpeter Ambrose Akinmusure. From the album Rising Grace, this is Boogaloo. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye. Thank you.
And that was Boogaloo by Wolfgang Mutspiel, ending this edition of Jazz Lineup. The programme was presented by Julian Joseph and produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. If you'd like more information on the programme, go to the programme page via the Radio 3 website. Well, opera coming up in a minute's time from the New York Met, and after that, at 8:30, the BBC Philharmonic offers us two Schumann symphonies recorded at their concert tours in Germany, plus a Tchaikovsky symphony.
It was the height of Stalin's terror, a period when the Soviet dictator was systematically eliminating his political opponents with a series of show trials. So the question remains, why did Prokofiev return to Russia at this time?
Donald MacLeod charts Prokofiev's descent from desired by Stalin to denounced by the state.
Prokofiev's music was now labelled seditious and harmful.
From Romeo and Juliet and War and Peace to musical propaganda, Sergei Prokofiev is Composer of the Week. Weekdays at noon and again at 6:30, beginning on Monday here on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, time now for Opera on 3 from the New York Met. It's presented by Mary Jo Heath and Ira Siff.
We're live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and our Saturday matinee is Salome, Richard Strauss's shocking one-act opera about an amoral young princess and her deadly obsession. Taking on the tour de force title role is soprano Patricia Rosette, opposite baritone Jelko Lucic as the prophet Johanna on. Our cast also features Nancy Fabiola Herrera and Gerhard Siegel, and German conductor Johannes Debus makes his network debut on the podium. Stay with us.
And we will be staying with New York after their short advertising break. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media. And broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. Now back to New York for one of the Met's little interview features. Here's Mary Jo Heath.
We're going backstage right now where Lauren Toulagian is speaking with our Salome.
Thanks very much, Mary Jo. I am so excited to speak with Patricia Rosette, and she's excited too. We literally have 1 minute to go before you have to go on stage. So let's quickly talk about this wonderful woman, Salome. She's quite a departure from the tragic Italian heroines you've sung in the past and played. Have you been thinking about playing Salome for a while here at the Met?
I have. I've been thinking about it for some time. It was mentioned to me really quite early on in my career, and I put it off, I think appropriately so, and the time came. I think it was, the suggestion was made to me in 2011 or 12, and I started thinking about really doing this role, and then, you know, got some engagements to do it, and I've just loved it. I just think it's very interesting. You called her a wonderful woman. She's a wonderfully hideous person, but it's fantastic theater to play such a dreadful human being.
Well, it's a wonderful character.
There is such an interesting complexity to her, but it's just to play someone so poorly behaved and allowed to be so it always makes for interesting opportunities for interpretive choices.
In our just last 20 seconds, any surprises from starting to perform her have you discovered in the performance of her?
The richness of the score, the amazing detail of the text, there is always, I think, going to be something upon which to dig in this kind of role. It's one of those roles that will continue to grow forever.
Well, thank you, Pat Rosette. Toy, toy, toy.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see and hear you.
Great.
This is Lauren Toulagian. We're live backstage at the Met. Mary Jo, back to you and Ira in the radio booth.
Ira, she played the fifth maid in Elektra earlier in her career, but otherwise, this is her first Strauss role.
Well, that's quite a leap, but it does seem to me a logical choice, considering her acting and vocal chops.
It's great of Patricia Rosette to talk to us before the show. I'm Mary Jo Heath. Join